Hello and welcome to episode number 424 of the Armin Show podcast, Science, People, Creativity, and bringing people back on who have been on in new dimensions. On this episode here, we have from episode 258, Shan Rizvi, and from episode 268, Dr. Mariam Bakir. Welcome to both of you, Shan and
Mariam. Thank you. Thank you for having
me. Hi, how are you?
I'm glad to have you both on. I'm doing great. I am still in Los Angeles, California, and you guys continue to be in...
We are still in Brooklyn, New York.
That is super cool. Long live that. 3,000 miles away, bringing the technology. This is cool. Now, I would want to check on a few updates to return. We'll focus first on your new venture, and then we'll come back to a little bit of that. So, you have a new thing that has been created, teamed up, partnership between you two, where you're both bringing your level of skill to it. What is that? Can you tell us a little bit about Tumos Care?
Yes. So Tumos Care is an AI-powered health optimization platform that makes it easy for anybody to see where they are, where they're going, where they could be going, and how to get there. We reached the conclusion that something like this was required because we feel like we're stuck between a healthcare industry for the ill and a wellness industry for the ill-informed. And there's a lot of noise. It's, you know, just... There's a cult for everything, every diet, every exercise regimen, every supplementation regime, everything is a cult. And it just becomes very difficult for people to get a sense of, you know, what really matters, which is, you know, how, where do you stand right now compared to the optimal? And what does that future trajectory look like? And how well are you optimizing based on your goals? So that's the vision we started with. And we've put a very... first version out there that anybody can use. They can just upload their health reports and get a pretty cool summary of their health, as well as analysis written by an AI that we have been fine-tuning together.
This is cool. Now, what is it in total, and what expertise do each of you bring to it?
So, I can start there. The expertise that I bring in is my years of medical training and then my 6+ years of working in New York, predominantly in hospital medicine. And that really changed a lot of my perspective about healthcare, life, everything in general, because working in hospital medicine, including during the pandemic, but even after that, it really showed me the side of healthcare that takes care of people who don't get good enough preventive and primary care. So when they get so sick that they have to come to the hospital, I was the doctor who was taking care of that side of life. And the biggest insight that I got from my years of working in the hospitals was that so many of these things are preventable. People don't have enough primary care physicians. They don't have good access to them. They don't have access to the biggest thing that I think that Tumos Care is, you know, one of the biggest things that it's offering is also that it's the data in front of you to see where your health is today, and then see how it's going to change. Have that realization of how things are inevitably going to change as we age, no matter which age group we're in, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, doesn't matter. Things will change as you age. And there are certain things that do affect the masses. And if we don't plan for them proactively, if we don't plan for what may come and what we know does affect people, and we don't take proactive actions towards them to ward them off as much as possible, then on the other side, what I see is, you know, when the system fails people like that, then they get so sick that they end up being in the hospital in front of me. And, you know, I am able to take care of them and I was able to treat them and get them out of the hospital. But to some extent, I always felt that it was always just a band-aid, because if you're not really getting down to the root causes of what are the top killers that are killing people, and not just even killing, it's about morbidity. It's about your the quality of life that these diseases give you. So yeah, I guess the you asked about what expertise I bring in. I bring in that perspective of what happens if we don't do this. And then that brought me to start brainstorming about, okay, what should happen to prevent this, to move in the direction of going away from these things? How can we save people and our own selves? It's not just about other people. I am curious about my own health and my own aging. How can I protect myself from these things as much as possible? It's never 100%. You will always need hospitals. You will always need hospital physicians. You will always need emergency rooms, and you should. But how can we prevent that? So that perspective, and then the perspective of as a physician, I am deeply invested in preventive medicine. I'm deeply invested in what we need to look at. What are the pillars of our health that we need to look into? And what does science say about it? What does evidence say about it? Where what are the things that we unanimously agree help us? And how can we really make an environment that allows more and more people to maintain and enrich those pillars in their lives? So yeah, so it was my training in hospital medicine, then my, just reading research, listening to experts, my own interest in prevention. And then after all of this, I myself decided that I don't want to be in hospital medicine anymore. And I actually just quit hospital medicine and I have moved to the other side. I've become a primary care physician now. Yeah, because I realized that that wasn't the, as much as I have a deep respect for that field, that's not the side of equation I wanted to be on. It just wasn't where it wasn't in line with my philosophy of health and life. So yeah, so then I've become a primary care physician yeah, so that was that's where, and I would come home every day to talk about those things with him, and then he brought in his expertise, and I guess he can talk about that.
Yeah, so you know how men are sometimes accused of jumping straight to the solution when simply listening empathetically may be more called for? It sort of started there with us because you can still hear us, right? Your video is a
Yes,
bit
yes.
it's talking a bit. Cool. So yeah, it really started there where I'm a software entrepreneur. I love innovation. I love thinking through a problem deeply, both from a technical and human standpoint, and then translating those into solutions to be designed. And I, often inhabit that frame of mind. So Mariam would come back from work, and she would just be just fed up with the world that she deals with, and being a man couldn't just help but jump straight to potential solutions, and I'd just be like, hey, but why doesn't somebody just like,
Why don't we do this? Why don't we do
why don't we,
that?
we could do A, we could do B, we could do C, we could do D. There's so many solutions to this problem. Why don't we do anything? And we even had a couple of fights about that where she'd be like, well, I can't do anything about it, right? So this your solution doesn't really help me right now. Right now I just need some empathy. But of course, over time we realized that of course we, if you do care about the problem, then at some point you do need to think of how to solve it. And in that process, I'd say she's the domain specialist. Of course, medical expertise is quite important, especially if you are applying AI in this area. You need to make sure that every analysis that is being created by AI, it fulfills the same quality requirements that we expect from good doctors, right? So that quality analysis quality, of course, you can't have that without you have a good domain specialist like Mariam on board. But then there's also the human aspect of it, right? I was looking at it from largely my perspective, and I had my own journey to recognizing the importance of these things that we can get into a little bit later. But that empathy of what life is like for the average person and the complexity of it, right? Like if you have higher incidence of disease in certain areas or in certain communities? What are the real causes of that? Is it that, you know, is it socioeconomic? Is it, you know, something else? So that I think that on a human level, actually seeing people and hearing the stories of their lives and having so many conversations with them about what their problem is and what solutions could be implemented, that's very valuable. I am the, you know, I'm the generalist entrepreneur in this project. So I'm more on the side of, you know, technical design and implementation, you know, the technical process for how do you actually prompt engineer or fine tune the models to do what we want them to do. How should we design not the product, but the broader company around it? And how do we get things done? So yeah, I'd say pretty much everything that isn't domain specific, all of that is on my desk.
Let's just say everything other than medical literally was all him, because I don't have training in any of that. And I would have not even in my wildest dreams been able to come up with this sort of an idea or imagination of creating something like this on my own, because I was just not trained that way. But he saw my frustration, and we agreed what is needed generally. But the idea to turn that into a software, a product that can be built with AI and all the details that he then, you know, showed me through, it was all him, because he has that expertise. He's built companies before. He knows how it's done. He knows how to, yeah, just find the right people and bring in his own expertise. Yeah, everything other than medical is like was his.
So yeah, you know, it was a complementarity work.
It was a good complementarity. I agree. It was a good combination of those two things. I definitely agree with that.
I get a strong sense of the combo that exists there, because that's the base of the health field. And then you have the technical aspects that Shannon has been doing for a long time. Put that together. That's ideal. You would have to look for that other person if you didn't have that other person as each other. So that is quite nifty in that regard. Exactly. Cool pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's nice to, you know, build something with your partner.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it brought us together.
For sure.
Yeah. I tell him that through this project, I was able to see sides of him, which are all work sides, right? Like when you, like how many times do you actually get to see your partner working? You don't, because, you know, you're working somewhere else, your partner somewhere else. But because I saw him working on this, I saw sides of him during work that I had never seen before, because I had never worked with him. And that, you know, that just helps you. It's, I mean, if someone can pull that through, that's a great way of deepening your relationship, I feel, because that was an added bonus that I didn't even ask for, but it really helped me, yeah, just explore his different aspects and of his personality, how he functions and his different traits that I didn't even know existed, because I had never seen him in those, you know, working like that. So that was also pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We don't really see our partners in their element.
In their element, exactly. That's the word. Yeah, I saw him in his element, and I was like, "Wow, I had never seen these sides before." So that was like an added bonus of it all as well. But the ultimate, the desire is, people are suffering. Healthcare is. We've done great things in healthcare, especially in the United States, but we are still struggling with helping people prevent a lot of the things that can largely be prevented. And the goal and the vision and the hope is to create something that, and we'll keep building on it. This is just the initial version of what we're doing. Like we have so many, I have so many things in my mind, so does he. The idea is to, just build something that offers that, you know, how he says that democratizes good health, that you can, this is something that you can see. This is a dashboard of your health. This is the data, the metrics that matter. There is, and my job is to make sure that they are as aligned with science and evidence and truth as possible. And there's no hyping, there's no biohacking or anything that is still in the gray zone that we're not sure about. There's enough we know that is true, that there are multiple human randomized controlled trials and scientific researches that are valuable have proven that those things work. But can we bring that to people? Can they see where their health stands today? Can they see where their health is predicted to move as they age? What trajectory would they take? We don't think about aging proactively, but what trajectory will it take if the status quo remains? And if that doesn't sound like how you want it to be, then what can you do to change it? What can you do to see how you can age better, how you can be more and more independent, age more, you know, with more vitality, have more energy in life and go after your goals? Because we, you know, as a society, like, by the time we're 60s, 70s, on an average, people start embracing elderly age, right? They start accepting a lot of things, especially women. When they hit menopause, they start accepting a lot of things as, oh, it's a part of aging. No, a lot of things can be changed. A lot of things can be, not everything. Of course, you will age and everybody will die one day. Of course, things go downhill. But there's so many things that you can still work on. Can we make this more and more accessible? Like, that's the
vision. It's really a question of scale, right?
Yeah.
Because there's no rocket science in this. There is no, you know, we're not.
There's no rocket science in this. Shoot.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, we're not designing some personalized peptide that, you know, like, just stops your biological aging, right?
It's true. I agree. The things that we know work are, it's not easy, but they're simple. We know we have a fair,
it's, a it, question
it's not
of,
rocket
it's
science.
A, it's a question of scale, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There are some people who have access to these things already, right? Like, if you have enough money, you can work with a good physician who has a focus on prevention and longevity, who can give a lot of personalized attention, who can do more than the bare minimum. And you know, it doesn't require a lot of effort to do it. It's just that, one, because of the noise that we were talking about earlier, right? There's it's hard to parse the signal from the noise. That makes it, that impacts the scalability. The other thing that impacts the scalability of these ideas is that it's not productified. It's serviceified, if I may use that word. What I mean by that is that It's available, but there's no product for it. It's a service for it. You can go to a doctor that does it and pay them a lot, and then you'll have it. And that's not having it is not a problem, but having it in a packaging that is scalable and that could be made available to a much larger percentage of people, that has been the problem. And the, you know, rise in improvements in AI that we're seeing over the last few months and that are expected to continue at a exponential pace over the next years, that means that a big component of that scalability that was missing is now here and now accessible to anyone, which is reasoning, right? Intelligence, computation. So if that piece of the puzzle you can scale now, then it really becomes a problem of how do you design the right kind of product that would take advantage of this new intelligence that we have in a way that makes that scalable. And this question of scale, we have been talking about for like years now, even like years before we even decided to start Thumos, right? So, you know, it started with us talking about first getting into this topic ourselves, and then exploring different ways to incorporate it into our own lives. And in the beginning, we talk about the whole coaching and wellness industry, right? And, you know, we had internal discussions about that, looking at different, you know, perspectives on that part of the industry. And my pet peeve with that since the beginning was just that, yeah, I mean, let's say we start a company that just does what other longevity physicians or longevity clinics are doing, right? We'd be able to enter that business ourselves, but we would be perhaps helping a couple dozen people. We wouldn't really have any chance of having a broader impact and actually making the solution to the intractable problem accessible to 100x number of people. And so this topic of scale, of you know, me having as much exposure to the tech industry as I do, the question of scale has been brainwashed into me.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm looking at something, I'm like, all right, how is this scale? Yeah. Like, is this actually, you know, is this actually a solution that can be rolled out at
That's
scale?
That's what he helped me see, exactly, because I'm a physician and I work one-to-one, right? So that's what he helped me see as well, because the solutions that I was coming up with were all still, you know, like maximum, like he's saying, a few thousand people per year, like the ones that the ideas that I had in my mind. But, you know, he helped me understand that, you know, there could be a way where you can create something that more people can use. And that was a good light bulb moment for me to. And then I basically just said, yes, I said, okay, let's do that. If you're telling me we can do this, cool, perfect. The more the merrier, let's do it.
Yeah, so.
As an element.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It has an element of scaling the unscalable, which I've heard of before, where you're taking something that's like a one-to-one, like you're describing, and then now you're multiplying scaling it to 10, 100, or 1,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like multiplying your time. Or expanding it in a way. So that's pretty cool.
But how you tell us about what you've been up to. Tell us about have you spoken to other people about longevity? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
Quite a bit. So actually, yeah, in the category, there's a lot that I've covered in the space. I once spoke to David Sinclair, the anti-aging person, with his book Lifespan, which connects to some of your material. A few days ago, I saw something that talked about comorbidities and how aging doesn't really kick in until you have a morbidity and then another morbidity at the same time. And then there's a parabolic increase in aging or chance of death, because once you don't take care of one or two or three things, they start to compile. And maybe your mitochondria can't keep up or whatever that might be. So then tackling these things detailed, like you guys are looking to do with the app or service, is a way to not let things pile up in that way. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah,
that's exactly the point that, you know, the industry is currently very siloed. Like, if you have a particular type of problem, then you go to a particular type of person for that problem. But as you're saying, a lot of these things, especially from a preventive standpoint, are multifactorial. You know, if it's just your LDL, that's a little high, that's fine, you know. But if your LDL is a bit more than slightly high, but and your LPA, which denotes genetic risk, if that's also high, then of course it's a different situation. If you also have, you know, if your HbA1c is then also high, then, you know, it compounds. The more things that are going wrong at the same time, then I suppose you should comment, but logically it seems like
no,
that.
No,
would.
You're right. And I'm glad you're trained well on the labs and stuff. It was all perfect. No, you're right. So it's true that one thing on its own can be detrimental, but one thing sometimes can also lead to another thing. Or also what happens is the same basic triggers are leading to multiple issues at the same time. So oftentimes when you tackle the basic triggers, which include your diet, your exercise, your sleep, your emotional, mental health, maybe some micronutrient deficiencies or whatever, a lot of times when you tackle those multiple things that are existing together can be taken care of all at the same time. It's not as simple. It's very nuanced. It's very complicated. But the hope is that with frequent, with periodic testing, monitoring, we can at least have a snapshot of where things stand, and then we tackle them one by one. And if there are some common themes in these issues, for example, if someone has underlying insulin resistance, that can contribute to diabetes, can also contribute to heart disease, that person can also get a stroke, they can also have, they can often have all three things together. But if we can tackle the underlying insulin resistance, for example, or the underlying risk factors that can be modified, then yes, you can actually target all these comorbidities as well, and they can improve with time. So ultimately, what it comes to are two things, at least, at the very least. It's first, knowing the metrics. You can't act on anything unless you don't know what am I dealing with here, right? So that's why we do the blood work. That's why we have these functional markers. They're not commonly done in the conventional healthcare system, but they're important. For example, what your muscle strength is, what your cardiorespiratory fitness is, what your muscle mass looks like, what does your visceral fat look like, the fat around the organs and all those things. So data to first see where you are, and if there are things that are coexisting together, we help to just parse out, okay, you know, what are the areas in which if you focus on these top three key areas, then this looks like a theme of problems that can be tackled with if you focus on these three things, for example. We're not talking about this. This is not replacing a physician. This is a collaboration with a physician. This is, you could call it an AI coach, or, you know, whatever term you want to call it, but essentially someone who helps people understand things better, analyze them better, gives them all the recommendations and all the things that are needed to be done. Specifically, let's say the top three things that you need to focus on, and then helping you start those things, helping you implement those new habits or those new changes, or guiding you through them. The sky is the limit. There are lots of pillars we can build on this. And then helping you assess that, you know, if this is also a time where you should be seeing your physician. For example, if your XYZ blood marker is high and you will benefit from some medications, you definitely need to see your physician. Your physician has to keep an eye on these things as well. So yeah, just it's like a companion, a health companion, right? Where people can understand that a lot of basic things, sometimes when they go wrong, they end up creating comorbidities that are often part of the same theme, which is what you're talking about. And those comorbidities definitely, like, further, they compound the adverse effects of aging. They compound your morbidity, compound your mortality. So often when you catch the root causes, the issues underlying, many of these things can be improved, if not completely eliminated, of course. So yeah, that's the vision of help of sorting out the comorbidities as well, because oftentimes it's a very, yeah, you're right, common theme.
We ultimately also want to move away from the language of just risk and prevention, right? Because even that, I believe, is a limited perspective, because it shouldn't just be about, oh, I want to minimize the chance of bad things happening. You also want to maximize the chance of good things happening, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Just to be...
Let's talk about...
So I kind of see it like... I don't know if you've played GTA or games like that, where you have a character that explores a free world environment. In any such game, you have like a profile for the character, right? Like in GTA, I remember, I suppose, what was it? Stamina, strength, energy, you know, these sort of measurable traits that can be improved, but that are sort of critical to the world, the game world.
Mm-hmm.
The question I like to think about is that, well, if, and a big if, you know, because then we can get into simulation theory, but if, you know, reality is some type of a simulation, and it's some kind of a game, and you had, like, you know, a character screen for every human, right? It's like, all right, Armin, like, I wanna play as Armin today, right? It's like, yeah, what are the different traits, like, that correlate to things you can do in this game of life, right? So of course, in a video game, it's a very you know, limited subset of traits that correlate to the activities that you can do in the game. But the game of life, of course, it's a lot more mystical, beautiful, with a lot of unknown in it too, right? So, I mean, ultimately, we would want this to be the most comprehensive model of where you stand at any given point in time. Not just in terms of preventing disease,
yeah,
but really objectively, you know, what are the things that make a human and how well are you doing all those things? You know, what are the, that's why the way we have designed the product, we have really grounded it in systems and functions of the body rather than, you know, focusing more on specific measurements and then explaining what biophysical, you know, really deeper microbiological phenomena that they denote and explaining them to the users. We really focus on, hey, your body is these systems and these systems do these things. And as best as we can measure right now, this is how you're doing with each of those things. And, you know, if you want your character to be able to, I don't know, run a marathon in this game, then you need to, you know, fulfill these requirements with regards to your muscular
like
and respiratory
like
fitness.
It's just about the aspect of what am I afraid of and what do I not want to get. But life should also be about what is it that I want to get? What fitness level do I want to have? What metabolic health do I want to have? What muscle strength do I want to have? What kind of blood markers would I like to have? Without taking any stress about it, I'm a big proponent of doing these things, but also enjoying it in the process and enjoying life, and you know, don't make don't get into the weeds, and just, you know, because if you start stressing over these things, that just beats the whole point. But I like your perspective. I agree with that. That it's not just about, oh, I want to make sure I don't get a stroke or a heart attack. It's also about, hey, but I also want to make sure that's good. Let's do that. We want to protect ourselves, of course. These things are diseases of aging as well. Cancer is a disease of aging, for example. So I agree. I get that. That's why we screen for people and everything. But what are the positive things? What is it that I can get? It's not just what I want to avoid, but what is it that I would like to achieve? Like when I'm 60, what do I want to do? When I'm 70, what do I want to do? How do I want my 80 to look like? And how can I prepare for that? How can I live in a certain way, live in a way that allows me to look forward to those things, not even forget about 60, to look forward to those things in the next decade, in the next couple of decades, right? And really maximize, you know, it's cliche, but like really tapping your fullest potential, the fullest potential of your body, before, you know, eventually we all pass away, of course, but it's really realizing your fullest potential. And it's, and that comes in with, you know, your mental potential, your physical potential, spiritually, how aligned are you with your own self and all those things. Like those are the things that ultimately really matter. I mean, why else are we living, right? Like you want to go for the best possible thing. So yeah, I like that perspective.
It's like, yeah, it's like a virtual mission control for your health. You know, have you seen the movie Inside Out?
No.
Oh, you should really check it out. It's a Pixar movie. It's probably my favorite movie ever. It's amazing. In a nutshell, the premise of the movie is that it's about a young girl and about her stressful childhood as her parents are moving across the country and having stressful situations in their life. And most of the movie is inside the girl's head. So there is a different character for every emotion. And so
Oh.
it's a very interesting visualization of the inside of a child's mind, especially as that mind is developing, right? And they show this sort of control panel of the self, I guess, where oftentimes different emotions are fighting over who's going to be in control. It's a beautiful movie. It's a really amazing, very intelligent movie. But this concept of this, control panel of the self that they show, we'd like Thumos eventually to be that, but in real life for your body. You're like, like if you could actually go into that part of your brain that keeps a model of the biological body. Because it has to, otherwise the body wouldn't exist. What does that look like, right? What are the knobs and the meters and the buttons and the elements on the user interface for that that room in the mind that keeps track of how the mind and the body is doing. So yeah, that would be the ultimate vision. And to figure out what type of data points are relevant to create as close as possible to that model of an individual. Because once you have that model, with AI being democratized and commoditized very fast, as long as you, it's really more about how you model the problem. Because once you if you can model the problem the right way, then applying AI to it and getting what you want out of it is going to be relatively easy. It's going to be more of a design problem. It's like, well, how do you really conceptualize it? How do you design it? How do you want it really? This really excites me. You know how Elon Musk very often has repeatedly said that he finds a future in which human beings aren't a multiplanetary species, depressing. It's a bit like that for me. I find a future where we don't have tech like this, I find that depressing. Like a future where, you can't, like, where you don't have technology like, really smart contact lenses that measure your diabetes, like your sugar levels. And double down is like your augmented reality interface, and then a Neuralink that is capturing separate data in your mind, and then you don't even have to wear a headset. Like your self is quantified, and you sit on your couch. You don't even have a headset. You're like, all right, pull down my health application.
Exactly.
You're like, you pull down your health application, and then suddenly from the ceiling drops like a 3D model of your body, that's like a game screen. It's like, hey, incidents of anger have been 70% higher than average in the last 2 weeks, so what's going on, and or vice versa. It's like, hey, you look like you've been very happy lately, Your endorphins and neural networks that correlate to good social contact are doing really well, like thumbs up, right? Those sort of things. A future where we don't have that kind of tech to improve life in the best way that we can imagine. That's sort of my version of that. Like I find a future without that, I find boring. I'm like, if to me it means if we don't have that in 10 years, to me, it means we failed, because right now with the tech we already have, it feels like, I mean, come on, that we should have
It
that.
should be around the
If
corner.
you don't have that,
Truly.
then something has gone wrong or needs to be investigated.
This is a good point here because I've noticed that the things that really get propelled forward are the things that you could not see a future without. That's where you'll have the most
Your
motivation
video is
to go towards something.
Stuck.
And that connects with what Maureen was saying too with going towards something.
Or we lost you for a moment, so you'd have to repeat, rewind last 10 seconds.
Great. So it does connect with, we want to go towards something, kind of like what Maureen was saying. Also, you brought it up that it's not just about avoiding difficulty, but going towards something that we are oriented towards. And you mentioned that you wouldn't want to live in a future that doesn't have this. Usually that's the things that end up showing up because there's such a cognitive dissonance with that not being there that we end up going in that direction, which causes such a service to be built from both of you guys. And going towards something, you build that agency, which gives you a feeling of that purpose and fulfillment, which is very inspiring.
Yeah.
And then it you're like an engine.
And it's a meta thing because we're talking about how to age well, longevity, and all those things, right? There is there's a big component of people finding their purpose, their meaning, service, something that makes them excited every day. It doesn't have to be big. People can, you know, people can do whatever they feel, but honing their craft, enjoying their craft, whatever they do means something to them. That it's a reason for them to get out of bed. Like, this is a big component of aging well, right? It's not just about what you're eating, what you're exercising, or, you know, how much you're sleeping, what you're doing in those waking hours of the, are you in service to other people? You know, are you driven by certain things? So it's a meta thing because we're building something that we hope will help people, you know, age like that. And we ourselves in the process are finding our purpose, our meaning, and things that are driving us every day while we're building this. It's very beautiful in that sense. I haven't felt like this before. This is really the first time, I would say, where, you know, I feel aligned with what I'm doing, both as a primary care physician and, you know, also building this on the side, is that it's, you know, I feel that it's a calling, and I sense that from him too. We both talk about it. We're excited about this. And this is a very big part of this is a very common theme of societies or people who age well. You have to find that. It should be like, this is a part of reaching for what is it that we can achieve in our lives, right? It's a big part of that.
And, you know, at a time when there's so much uncertainty, when, you know, we don't know what impact AI is going to have on the economy, on politics, on culture. You know, there's a lot up in the air right now. And I've encountered that type of certainty in my own life. So I have some reference point as to how, you know, what that may feel like and what the, how you think through such a situation in such a time, right? And I realized that for me, I was compelled to ask the question, well, what is in my control, right? Like, if all these things are happening, like, what do I know that I can do that will help regardless of anything else? And it is this. Yeah. That's, you know, AI gets really advanced or AI doesn't get advanced. There's like a massive war, or there's massive peace. In each case, what you have to optimize is the same. You have to be better. You have to, you know, be in a better state of mind, state of body, just, better optimized. And that grounding that I felt, and I'm sure a lot of people feel when they, you know, pursue similar longer-term goals, that is one of the gifts that we want to share with people, where, you know, whether you're poor, whether you're rich, you might, you know, whatever your unique circumstances are, to help ground you in this. It's like, hey, you know, maybe you're, you know, from a socioeconomically disadvantaged background, and for you, that mobility, socioeconomic mobility, is really important. Well, the truth is, this is like, mental and physical fitness probably are the top sources of socioeconomic mobility, because if you really want to excel, this is something you're going to crack, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know,
no, I like that. It's about people understanding and realizing their agency, that there may be things out of their control, but there's still so much they can do to steer their life, their ship in a direction that they would want. And that agency, realizing that agency, is very crucial. Even like, even other than socioeconomic factors, I come across patients, for example, who have strong family history of different diseases, right? They may have a very strong family history of really, you know, like early onset heart disease or diabetes or Alzheimer's, dementia, or cancer. There's so many things that, you know, they have in their family. There are people who have that, right? And as much as I understand as a physician that family history matters, and it's very crucial in realizing those things, I have seen sometimes that patients take that as a reason to just accept that they will also get that one day. Oh yeah, of course, you know, XYZ, my entire family has that. I am also going to get that one day. And that may be true. I have family history of diabetes. I may get diabetes one day. That's true. There is a role that genetics play. But at the end of the day, it's about your agency. Okay, sure. It's in your, you know, it's in your family history. You can't change it, right? That's literally, there's something you can't change about it. But there are things you can do. There's still things you can do. If you get down to the root of what is driving these issues, it's possible if you don't avoid it completely, you may be able to push the years without those diseases. Or even if you get it, you may still be able to lead a beautiful, healthy, active life full of purpose and still taking care of your health. There's so much you can do regardless of your circumstances that you cannot control. And finding that agency, that sense of power, that sense of control, that sense of what is it that I can do, is very, very important for that inner strength that you need to age well. Like, it's all, you know, it's a circle. Like, you need that to get that. So yeah.
You know, I have heart disease in my family, and it really cracked me up once. I read it somewhere. I can't recall exactly where it was, but it has stayed with me because it's hilarious and so true. It's something like, it's not that heart disease runs in your family, it's that nobody runs in your family.
It's like, that's pretty good right there.
Like, it's so...
You can still do so much, is what I tell my patients. You can still do so much. It's heartbreaking. I've come across young patients who start getting the... And the problem is, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if you just accept you're going to get it, then that makes you behave in certain ways that increases the chances of you getting it. And then when you get it, you're like, see, I told you, it's in my genes. I'm going to get it. But no, there was so much you can do right at the offset. You know, there's so much that we can do. And that's what my hope and my vision is, that I want myself to see that, and I want other people to be able to see that for themselves.
Yeah, it's let's see, you know, we're quite excited. Lots of work to do. it's just the beginning.
Yeah, this is just the beginning.
We're just, you know, we're gearing up for a lot of hard work to come. Luckily we've been working out, so we're also, you know, strengthening ourselves for the strengthening of others that we're trying to do. And yeah, you know, something tells me this is very important right now. Something tells me that with the way things are in the world, we gotta, you know, do more to keep our people fit and ready to deal with the type of change and uncertainty that may be awaiting us as we invent artificial intelligence, right?
I like that. I like that. We don't think about it, but you're right. If the AI today was something we couldn't even imagine just a few months ago, I don't know. How new is it then, you know, like, what is it that might be awaiting us few months to years down the line. You know, it could be, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, you know, there could be so many great things, but to even catch up to the great things, mentally, physically, yeah, you got to be fit, people, you got to be healthy and ready for the, you know, the best possible life you can live. Like, that's what this is about. Let's all live the best possible life we can live, and let's help each other do the same.
I want to add in, related to the earlier running theme and marathon, I did the LA marathon this year, which was my first marathon. So shout out to that. That was super cool. And other people prepared. I didn't prepare, but I do recommend preparing. It is meant to be prepared for, but still
of
good.
Of course, yeah.
And it's a nice theme there.
Awesome.
I've got one here. Thank you. It's a question on this one. What elements of the most care require it to be 2024? And what elements of it could you both have made in 2014? What are the parts that separate? What is using current material was necessary? Or why could you have not done similar 10 years ago? What's the difference?
That's a good question.
So you're asking, what's the question again that you're asking?
What
elements?
What are we doing today that we couldn't do in 2014?
10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Sorry, you're stuck again, but we'll just wait.
The thing I'm checking, I'm not sure if it's glitched there, but is what elements could not have been included
possible
10 years ago?
10 years ago?
In what you have currently
done. Fantastic.
Yes.
Good question. Mm-hmm. You want to take that? And I'll add it.
So it's the... it's the broader personalized analysis that we're currently doing with the fine-tuned large language models. That, of course, would not have been possible. I mean, you could still, let's say, have people provide their blood biomarkers and, you know, grade them red, green, yellow. That, of course, you could still do. And you could figure out some generic, statements like, hey, if X is red, then like say this. If X is green, then say this, right? So you could do a lot of these if-else statements and use that to create some kind of a report on your blood biomarkers. But of course, that has limitations. What we're doing now that wasn't possible 10 years ago, of course, is thanks to artificial intelligence, where we don't have to use these type of manual if-else logic to analyze biomarkers, which has several benefits. Firstly, you can combine different biomarkers and have like a more holistic assessment. So for example, you could include the blood biomarkers for your skeletal system and your body composition scan and your, say, pre-novo MRI scan of your body. And you could combine it and have AI write an analysis for your skeletal system. That would not have been possible 10 years ago because, you know, unless you could really specify manually, again, would be like, it would be a massive tree of if-else statements that you would need to achieve the same effect. Now you can apply, foundation model reasoning to it. That makes it better. That allows it to consider more data points without explicitly defining the relationships between them. Then the personalized AI advice part, like Q&A, like, you know, we fine-tune a chat version of the model for that longevity advisor functionality. That would not have been possible. Then, of course, we're not doing this yet, but we're going to have voice integration. That would not have been possible 10 years ago, where, we would want ultimately to not just have a chat interface, have it be as seamless and organic as possible. So for example, You upload your blood work, you get your analysis and reports and everything, and you look at that and you ask a couple of clarification questions, and everything's fine. And then, you have an option to have the AI advisor give you a call on your phone at a predetermined time every week. You could literally have it in the calendar every Friday, 11:15 in the morning. I get a call from Thumos, and it just feels like just your actual doctor calling you and talking to you and just asking you how things are going. It's like, hey, we looked at your respiratory fitness numbers and said you're all fine, but your stamina needs to get better. And you should, in order to make that better, of course, you need to do 150 minutes of zone two every week. Are you, how's it going? Like, were you able to start doing more cardio? Are you struggling? Something, whatever, whatever. And to actually have this more real time, not just conversational, but I would say personal, voice conversational support that is really seamless, that would not have been possible at all 10 years ago. So AI is basically the big, it does improve the quality of this solution,
Of course.
and also the scalability, as we
Hands down.
discussed earlier.
Hands down. I think the other two things that come to my mind are, from my perspective, are that over the last 10 years, we have had a lot of great researches, a lot of great deeper understanding of or these the chronic diseases that affect us as a population, and the deeply understanding the pathophysiology, the biochemistry of those things. That understanding has deepened in the last 10 years, of
Important.
course. And we've been able to come up with testing and markers that many of them are still the same, but we've been able to come up with many different ways of understanding those things, so that if we are trying to prevent them, our ability to now do that, I feel at least, I'm happy to talk to someone if they feel this was similar in 10 years ago, and we can talk about it. But I think that understanding as a scientific, in the scientific world, that understanding has deepened. Our understanding of sleep has deepened. Our understanding of nutrition has deepened. Our understanding of exercise has deepened. Our understanding of mental health has deepened. Like, this has been a wave of people understanding psychology has deepened. Our understanding of all these things have really deepened. So that definitely helps us, in creating this product, because we have a lot of things at our disposal to be able to use that in our recommendations and everything. And then on a more personal level, I think 10 years ago, I did not have the self-belief and the self-confidence to start something like this, or to say that I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it work. I didn't have any of that. I was definitely, but I was a great student. I was in 10 years ago, where was I? I had just graduated med school, right? So, I was always smart, I was always hardworking, but it's a work in progress. And at that time, I definitely did not have what I have today. And you need, because building something like this is a marathon, and you need to have that mental fortitude, that ability to regulate your emotions on a day-to-day basis. How do you deal with difficulties? These are the things that help you decide whether you can how fast you quit, right? Like, because these things are difficult. And when do you quit? Is the do you ever quit? But you need that mental fortitude to even think like that, have that vision. I definitely did not have those things at that time. So I am doing what I'm doing today because my life prepared me in such a way that I'm in a position to now confidently say that, yeah, heck yeah, I'm building this, right? So yeah, that couldn't happen 10 years ago for sure. And I've seen his transformation as well, in the sense that, yeah, both of us mentally are in a much better position to do something like this and take it to the point of completion. Or, well, there may never be any point of completion for this. It's unending. But yeah, to to make something real out of this is, you got to prepare for that. And that was not possible 10 years ago. That's another thing that comes to my mind.
I like that you point out things like, these are the things I pay attention to quite a bit separately, like self-confidence, going towards something, the relationship aspect. I'm very people and mind oriented, so those things really speak to me. And so, yeah, you have to get into a certain stage or place to do a thing or have a good influence for that belief to take place. Shan may be positive in that regard that propels in that direction. And then sometimes you can bounce off self-confidence. So one person starts and then the other one provides some confidence in another area.
Yeah, like, no, that happens all the time. Upwards. Yeah. And then you start doubting yourself, but then that's where the game is, right? You don't, you know, you can doubt yourself, but question those doubts, of course, because you want to make sure that, you know, you could be doubting yourself correctly. So you want to have that humility to examine the doubt, but don't let that doubt stop you from moving forward. Like that, that is something that I feel we have that much better now. So, and you need that to, you know, keep things going in the worst of circumstances or whatever that is.
Yeah.
It's like one of those chemical reaction things where the activation energy hump is too high. And then if you don't get above the hump, then you don't get to the next thing, too much friction. So, but if that's lowered or you have some propellant, then you get over it and boom, and it's not the point, it's stuck. Cause when you get stuck, then that's it. And that ends the whole process. But yeah. We don't need to get to that point.
Exactly.
Yeah, what has been one difficulty in creating the most care that comes to mind? Is there any substantial difficulty where you think like this was a potential stoppage point, but we surpassed that somehow?
I mean, to get large language models.
Get to where you are today.
Sorry?
To get the service to where it is today.
Yeah, exactly. So, the big uncertainty, of course, was whether we would get large language models to behave the way we need to for this application. Because, of course, they can have a tendency to make up facts and hallucinate and make mistakes and all these sort of problems that large language models can have if... not fine-tuned, prompted, and applied correctly. So that was, you know, that's something that could have just made this fail if that didn't work. And in the first couple of weeks, we had no guarantee that it would work. We were getting mixed results, and we weren't sure that our fine-tuning and prompting strategy would actually work, especially for a use case like health, where, you know, you'd need to really make sure that it works. You know, the margin for error isn't so high, unfortunately. So that was one big technical obstacle that we had to surmount. Then money was an obstacle too, because to build the first version of something like this, when you can't hire any people, there's zero full-time employees, it's a completely distributed team of consultants and freelancers across three continents right now. That was also an uncertainty that, you know, this is a multi-billion dollar industry. There's a lot of massive companies trying to tackle the same problem from a number of different perspectives. So, to do that without having very minimal resources, especially in an area like health where, HIPAA law, like HIPAA regulations, like GDPR regulations, even just to make something compliant for many companies can be a really expensive process. So I'd say, scarcity of resources, of course, could have also just blocked our ability to do it. I would say it happened because of, partly creativity, partly serendipity, partly luck. You know, sometimes you just meet the right type of person at the right time, and you know, you want to design something, and you're like, hey, I worked with this designer in the past, and you contact them, and hey, luckily they're available right now, and they're willing to work, and then you know, luckily they end up doing a you know as consistent of a job as you expect, and then things sort of work. So yeah, you know, we like I would say, the AI, the large language models mm-hmm. not working. Our strategy not working there, that could have blocked this. Lack of resources could have, you know, blocked it too, because we have a very, very little margin for error, really. Like if anything went wrong and we had to start over, we'd have like way less resources to do anything. But I have to add all there also that the scarcity of resources did also force creativity, and it did have a positive effect too. As much as I'd love to, you know,
have more
get Sequoia or Andreessen Horowitz to invest in us right now, not having that and just just completely having to be self-reliant, that forced a degree of creativity and determination that may have otherwise, you know, been hard to extract from ourselves.
Agreed.
Right. I always look at the challenges and the positive upswings of a new effort, because that says a lot. Those are the points where maybe somebody else tried the same thing and then they were stopped maybe in that form. Where would you, what is the plan? How does it get out to people? What happens moving in the next, let's say, few months that you would like to occur?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the exciting part, right? Now we're working on getting the message out there. We're planning a number of marketing activities. Our goal right now would be to, one, you know, validate that people want something like this in specifically this form. It may be they would like mobile app, so might be that, you know, we prioritize that. But really, in terms of marketing, we're, you know, gonna start posting content. We're making videos to put out there. We plan on organizing a couple of longevity themed events at community and social places here in New York City, to meet people in person. We're designing flyers to distribute. We were literally thinking of, you know, identifying neighborhoods in the city, in Manhattan and Brooklyn, where we know the vibe is a bit more, you know, held in and you know, oriented towards health and wellness. And yeah, like we'll be trying everything that we can think of as a means to get the message out there and iterate like 100 times. We'll see what's working, what's not working.
And continuously working on the product.
Yeah.
We've only built the first version right now, which is good enough to get it out there. And I would love for people to use it, give us their feedback. And we ourselves will keep checking everything on a regular basis. And there's still so many things that are not part of this product that I know we will add. Hopefully in the next few months, I see that happening. So that definitely the product will get better and better, basically.
I mean, the product is just getting started.
It's like, just getting started. It's going to get better and better. We want people to use it. We want feedback. And even when people don't use it, we want their feedback. We want to know why they're not using it, because that's very crucial piece of information to help us understand, you know, what is it that people might be looking for that's not part of it, and what is it that we can then add to help, you know, to meet them where they are, and take it from there. So it's just an ongoing, endless process of reiteration.
Like, you know, maximize users, maximize feedback, maximize iteration.
Maximize iteration and just keep going. And then we'll see where this product is 1 year down the line or end of this year. I want to look at where this product is end of this year. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Where where do people go to use it, or how do they use it? It's an app, it's on a website. Where?
So they can just, it's a web app for now. We don't have a mobile application, but it is mobile friendly. Just go to www.thumoscare.com. You can sign up, create a free account. Unfortunately, you can only sign in with a Google account right now. Based on the assumption, I think most people have a Gmail account. But we're going to add support for login with a phone or an email in a couple of weeks, if that matters. But it's quite simple. Just go sign up. If you have a recent lab test result, just upload that file, wait 3 to 4 minutes, and you will, you will see something amazing. I promise you.
That is super cool. Shan Rizvi, Dr. Mariam Bakir, I would like to thank both of you for joining on this episode, describing a bit about ThumosCare and the plans for it moving forward here.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for having us again.
Talking to you, yeah. And thanks for having us.
Super glad to. And we are out.